5,000, he broke the fish and the bread and gave it to the disciples, and their job was just to pass it on. So that's all I'm here to do, pass on what I've received. So let's see if we can get this going. That's a good start. Dennis, I might need you to just click through. There we go. All right, so you've already seen the video, and that's actually covered a few bits and pieces that I've got, which is fine. I'll just skip over those. But the verse we're looking at is one which is often used against Christians, or at least used to hold us account to what people believe that we believe as Christians, and what people think how we should act. The entire Matthew chapter 5, 6 and 7 are all the retelling of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Looking at the sections of that Sermon on the Mount, you can see there's a whole range of different topics which are covered. And the one that we're particularly interested in is the one there about retaliation. And obviously the videos have covered a little bit on loving your enemies as well, which very closely related. I've got a few slides, so you're not looking at me. You can be looking up there. In the section that we're talking about, which was entitled Retaliation in my Bible, and as you saw in the video, it talked about the local laws and the legal system and the references, the context around those sections in this passage. As you saw, verse 40 talking about giving of the cloak, which was actually a contradiction or a break from the Jewish law, which suggested that you shouldn't give that up because then you'd be naked from the waist up, and that was a bad thing. So verse 41 talking about Roman soldiers demanding someone's service up to a mile, and again Jesus suggesting go the second mile. And verse 42, less about law but about generosity, and all giving of the same theme, which giving of yourself, that servant heart. So verse 39, which is the one we're looking at, turning the other cheek. Apparently, from my reading, what I found was it was actually reference to a local law which suggested that a citizen who was actually struck on the right cheek, which would suggest if most people are right-handed, would be a backhanded slap, could be used as a way of shaming somebody publicly. So if it was a public shaming by striking on the right cheek, that there was actually a legal recourse for that person if they were falsely accused or whatever. I don't know the whole logistics of it, but suffice to say it was talking about shame. And whenever you're talking about shame, you're talking about your own ego and pride being hurt and being impacted. And that's, I think, a significant point from this whole section. Throughout all of these verses, Jesus is talking about going further, about being prepared to give of yourself, about not looking at so much the physical aspect, the physical going the extra mile, the physical giving of your cloak, but more about looking at your own heart and your own motivation for these situations that you might be in. So I think it's important that we look at why Jesus chose to use these as his examples. He was giving examples in a legal, in a justice and a legal context. But what was he actually trying to say? Obviously, Jesus knew his audience. And at the start of, at the end of chapter 4 and the start of chapter 5 in Matthew, it talks about a large crowd, Jesus going up to the mountain, his disciples being there. So it suggests there was more than his disciples there present. But Jesus knew his audience. And in multiple sections in chapter 5, he uses the same language. He starts by saying, you've heard it said, and he goes on to say, but I say. And this is one of the things that, one of the reasons why Jesus is such a radical and was such a radical person for his time, because who has the right to say that? Who has the right to add to the law of Moses? Who has the right and the authority to add to that which the people at the time would have been very familiar with. So, but these points that he references by saying you've heard it said are all taken from the Torah, from the Jewish law, the first five books of the Old Testament, something that they would have been familiar with. And the Torah itself, the Jewish law, was something given by God, and it was very much had, I won't go into, I said I'm not a theologian, but one of the significant points that I pick up on and I think is important to, for us to consider, is that these were teachings given by God to his people, to his set apart people, on how to live for their benefit. How to live as a community, how to live as a nation, as the nation of Israel, how to live as a people set apart from the nations around them. Given, as was actually referenced in the video, by God as if a father, a good father, giving direction to their children. And that's, I think, a really significant point to remember when thinking about this, is that the motivation was not there to seek punishment, was not there that God would then have the ability to bring justice or punishment to his people, but quite the opposite. It was about establishing guidelines that would allow his people to live in harmony. So the section... at the start of this whole section in verse 38, he starts with an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Now, this is, again, a reference to the Torah, to the Jewish law. And at the time the Jewish law was established in the first few books of the Bible, the legal system was a bit all over the place from what I gather, not having been there. But the nations around very much, if they had a justice system, it was asymmetric. By that I meant the punishment didn't always fit the crime. It was more about power and control than it was about actually establishing justice. So God setting this these instructions in place for his people, again for their benefit, was very much about establishing common ground and a balanced justice system. One where the punishment would fit the crime and would be appropriate for the crime. So, but even here in Matthew, Jesus is saying that the balanced standard for justice, he's taking that an extra step and saying, all right, you have a justice, a legal recourse for the public shaming, for in the legal system, you have that methodology, you have that ability to go and seek recourse, but don't. He's taking it a step further and he's saying, look internally, look at your own heart and choose not to. As an example of Jesus's reference to the Torah earlier, and he talks about, he gives the example about, it says, do not murder. But I say, if you've been angry with your brother, you'd be guilty. And this is crops up a few times in chapter 5, where Jesus talks about a Jewish law, legal precedent, and makes it clear that we will never measure up because in the case of murder, if you've been angry with your brother, you're still guilty. So it doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter how we approach these things. It doesn't matter what we bring to the party. We're never going to measure up. We're never going to be good enough. But Jesus was here to say that he will. And further in earlier in verse 17, he talks about how that he came to fulfill the law, to complete the Torah, to complete a lot of things. But in the context of what we're talking about, he came to personify the law and to fulfill it to completion. So wherever we fall down, which we do all the time, I certainly do, Jesus is here to say that he fulfilled it, he delivered it, and he was the one who completed it for us. So there's a legal context and also a historical context, I guess, that I wanted to, the points I wanted to make here. But is it a message that we should be pacifists, that we should be that we should take a beating, that we should lay down and not fight back? I don't believe that's the case, and certainly not in the context of the original legal context and the law. For me, for Sean asked me to speak here about 6 months ago. So over the preceding 6 months, the message and the theme that has sort of come through to me is that it's our attitude and our response about retaliation. It's how we feel in the situation. The context of this passage is more about how it hurts our ego and our pride and our response to that. And certainly it's about choosing a humble path rather than an aggressive one. I grew up in the 80s, which makes me old, but it also means I grew up in a time of bad fashion and some good music. But it was also, the 80s were a time where demonic activity, Satanism, the occult were prevalent. It was a bit of a heyday for these type of people, groups, activities. Teachings of Crowley, LaVey were more mainstream, and they were having a bit of a heyday. You had Dungeons and Dragons and a whole range of different things really taking quite a mainstream approach. And they were certainly, these themes and topics were not uncommon in the church, and certainly even in youth groups. I remember having youth groups where the study would be around some of these topics in a Christian context. But during the 80s, there was certainly a time where these things were still seen as activities of the dark, I guess. To contrast it, Christian light, Satan and evil, dark times. These activities were still seen as activities in darkness and by people who were trapped in darkness. But now, these days, it seems to have changed a bit, I think. It's less black and more grey now. You have organisations like the Church of Satan seeking for the right to publicly install a statue of Baphomet in America, right alongside a Christian-based statue in, I can't remember the town, but a town in America within the last few months. And their claim for religious freedom was their justification for being able to do this. Why do I mention it? The teachings of those in the dark, they have a counter to this verse. They have a counter to Jesus' message to turn the other cheek. And it's not just as simple as strike back, but rather they talk about destroying your enemy. If you're in this situation, destroy your enemy, strike them back with interest, terrorize your adversary. In fact, turning the other cheek is seen as a sign of a coward. So that's the counterpoint to this discussion. And unfortunately, in today's society, revenge, that approach, is too often seen as the same and equated to justice. I'm a huge movie fan, and Hollywood certainly loves this whole concept of revenge. There's a few movie titles for where revenge is seen as either a main theme or a minor theme for revenge. Hollywood approaches this with the music, the camera angles, the script, the struggle you see the hero go through. Everything is wound up to 11 to ensure that the hero gets their justice. And in fact, the greater the crime, the more justified is the retaliation. So the greater the crime, the more justified is the retaliation, and the more brutal the retaliation can be because it is justified. So Hollywood, for one, seems to support the mantra to destroy your opponent. So what is our natural inclination? I'd argue that a natural inclination is certainly not to turn the other cheek, but rather to fight back, to strike back, to protect our ego and our pride, to not let that be hurt. So Jesus is if turning the other cheek was natural, then Jesus' message wouldn't have been quite so radical, and it certainly wouldn't have needed to even be said. But it was. Because turning the other cheek is an act. It's a conscious act that we have to make. And it's certainly not a natural choice for this fallen world. C.H. Spurgeon wrote something which I found really interesting while studying for today. And you can I'll read through the first section of it. He says, "If a man has insulted me," and this is in the context where he's talking here, is in the context of certainly talking about turning the other cheek, but he's talking about justice and what is actually, whether turning the other cheek is actually reflecting justice or not, basically. He says, "If a man has insulted me and I forgive him, am I unjust? If a man has slandered me and I overlook it, am I unjust? If a man has done me an injury and I refuse to take any revenge except that of doing good to him, am I unjust? Certainly I'm not acting according to the laws of justice, but then I am not the judge. And not being the judge, why should I undertake an office to which I am not called?" So I found it really interesting that Spurgeon was questioning, is it right to turn the other cheek? Is it wrong to turn the other cheek? And putting it on trial, so to speak. And certainly, I don't think anybody would argue that if somebody chose to give mercy and to show mercy, that they would be in the wrong. There was a case in the last couple of weeks which I read about where I think it was a black guy in America who was shot dead by a police officer as she entered the home. She went into the wrong home. She thought it was her home, saw someone else there, shot him. But at the trial, from what I read, the brother forgave the police officer. That was an act of turning the other cheek. That's mercy and humility. C.S. Lewis, who's certainly a favourite author of many here, in particular Elizabeth, I know, in his book Weight of Glory, he says, that is, insofar as the only relevant factors in the case are an injury to me by my neighbour, talking obviously specifically about turning the other cheek, and a desire on my part to retaliate, the natural inclination, then I hold that Christianity commands the absolute mortification of that desire. No quarter whatever is given to the voice within us, which says, he's done it to me, so I'll do it to him. It's a very strong language. But he's basically saying, run away from your natural desire to retaliate, because it's not a sign of Christianity, is his message. Romans 12 talks a little bit further on this topic of Matthew 5, and I won't read through all of it there, but the point, the significant aspect that I found in this is that one highlighted verse, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. I think that references the Torah, the God's instructions, God's direction for his set apart people, and it certainly resonates for us today as well, to live at peace as best we can with everyone. And this is perhaps the most significant message that I've got, which is what I'm wanting to give today on this topic, is that of relationships. Everybody will have and has had and will have and has relationships throughout their life. And as such, we'll all be hurt. We will all hurt others, directly, indirectly, on purpose, it doesn't matter. You'll all receive some form of emotional pain. And if we look at turning the other cheek, being struck on the cheek as a reflection of physical pain, emotional pain, as we know, is multitude times worse. It lasts longer. The person who said sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me was an idiot. The emotional pain and suffering caused by words, caused by people, relationships, last longer and cut deeper. So how do we avoid allowing pain and discomfort from turning into trauma? And again, we're not talking about becoming an easy target here. That's not the context of what this verse, what this passage talks about. Excuse me. As we saw in the video, going further on, it talks about loving your enemies. And I don't know about you, but don't believe I actually have any real enemies. I've never been in a fight. But I do have people I love and people who love me, whether that's family, work colleagues, friends, doesn't matter. The point is that each of those will have and will continue to hurt me, and I'll continue to hurt them in various ways throughout our lives, whether that's through deed, through word, through inactivity. It doesn't matter what it is. There will be pain and suffering in some form. And it's very easy to jump to our natural inclination, which is to retaliate, to ensure that justice is served, to ensure that they get what's coming to them and they get back what they've given to us. So how do we cope with that? How do we deal with that? How do we heal through that? And I think the point that came to me over recent months was Jesus surrounded himself with people he trusted. He was in community all the time. He was in with people all the time. He always had people around him. Even in the garden right before his crucifixion, he had his disciples with him praying. This is, I believe, the critical bit about all emotional pain. It's community, sharing, talking, seeking help, looking out for each other. Pain will come, but healing is possible, and through Christ, definitely, but also through what Christ has established. Here we've got a church of people who care about each other, and that is part of how we can support and help each other through the pain that will come and through the suffering and through education and help and help us to remain humble as well, because there's always someone worse off. There's always somebody who can help you see it from a different perspective. All of these are systems and things that exist that will help us to be able to endure, push through, and survive. And I think the responding with mercy and in humility and healing go very much hand in hand. I'll end with a story. A number of years ago, I worked with in a small team, and in that team, there were two guys who worked very closely together. Best way to describe them without giving away their names is one was a red-headed, fiery Scottish chap, and the other one was an Italian guy. The Scot and the Italian worked very, very closely together. The Scot, red-headed, fiery temper, always needed to be right. He loved to be right. And when he knew he was right, he would find and calculate ways of actually ensuring that people knew that. He would hold a grudge, and he would calculate ways to prove his point and win. To his detriment, he ended up getting stomach ulcers and a whole range of things. But it had a physical cost for him. But one day, the Italian chap had a word to him, and he asked him a simple question. He said, next time you're in these situations, ask yourself, is this a fight that you really need to win? Now, the Scot took this message and applied it from then on, and he chose his battles because he realized that the point was, when is it more about your pride and ego and less about the truth? And certainly for us, I think the point that we should consider is, who should it be more about? Who can people see? Should it be us or should it be Christ?